Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365, because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply.
Welcome to La Liga Weekly. So I spend days telling Manchester United fans that Barca are really solid, best defensive record in Europe, blah, blah. And that, people running around trying to score goals, multiple players charging into the box at the same time. That's not what we pay to see. But then it was back to business in La Liga. 3 points, clean sheet, maybe go crazy and score a second goal. Will Barca have what it takes at Old Trafford this Thursday? Not according to the old Man United players who cover their games, who believe they're the best team in the world and somehow are also angry and sad after every game. For listeners outside of the UK, I mean Paul Scholes. It's a big week for La Liga versus Premier League wars on your favourite social media outlet. With Liverpool back in form, if that is your hobby, then pray for Benzema. I genuinely heard a presenter on British radio this week say that the Premier League is best because of the number of away wins. You literally make anything up. Don't feel obliged to do anything boring, like check if it's true. What is true is that Real Madrid's Álvaro Rodriguez has more assists this season than Eden Hazard and Mariano Diaz combined. And he only made his debut in the 87th minute. You might want to do your own research on whether Quique Setién has been sacked by the time you listen to this. Villarreal have lost 4 in a row. Although one of those was a narrow defeat against Barcelona. And they got hammered by Elche and Mallorca. But to be fair, experienced players let him down. It turns out Manu Trigueros has got a right hook like Tyson Fury. Who could have guessed? And that 40-year-old Pepe Reina's reflexes aren't what they were. Who could have guessed? Valencia have a new man in charge, Ruben Baraja, from the glory days, a strategy that has never failed a football club before. Thank you. Welcome along, everybody. Thank you to the Patreons, patreon.com/LTEL. We'll be back on Friday having a look at a big week of European football coming up, Terry. You happened to be recording a programme literally at the time that Barcelona Manchester United was being played. So wonderful, wonderful show.
We started 15 minutes after kickoff, so we were already in place in the studio and we finished 5 minutes before the end. And then on Friday, I was quizzed with the same people who were in the studio with me. We were debating a game that we'd clearly not watched, apart from highlights and then you read about it and try and catch up with it. So, yeah, it was quite bizarre, but yes.
It turns out, by the way, for people who don't watch Premier League football, Manchester United are quite good now they've got a proper manager. Now, who would have thought that would be the case? But also, it's interesting, isn't it, that the contrast between Barcelona, their defensive record in La Liga, and their defensive record when they've played top teams. And Manchester United are a top team now. They've got a bit unlucky with the draw, Barcelona. I think that's indisputable, isn't it, to have had, you know, Bayern Munich, Inter, and Manchester United and potentially going out of, you know, in the middle of February and going out of the Europa League would be a real blow. But it was actually really good. It was, you know, like, you know, I wonder if it's just United have a lot of good players and they were throwing players forward at Barcelona. And I think it is cagier, isn't it? It's more tactical. The teams aren't really taking those kind of gambles, I think, when they go and play Barcelona.
Yeah, but in saying that, I think there have been teams that have done that this year and somehow part of the season we've been looking at Barcelona and we can say the same about the game last night. I don't know how Cadiz didn't score goals last night.
Stegen
made numerous saves, they had goals disallowed and they hit the post twice.
Yeah.
So there is an element of, when you look at the stats of Barcelona, clearly Ter Stegen is playing far better than he was. He's making loads more saves percentage-wise than he has done. Certainly last season, and for some while. So we see him to Stegen back to his very, very best. So I think that is one of the reasons why. And they are different. That they can close down high up the pitch. I don't want to be detrimental, but when you look at the players in the last few seasons that were playing up front, they were never going to start closing down, running around. Now, Lewandowski does his fair share, but when you had Suarez, Neymar, Messi, there was no, right, you're the first line of defence and our midfield will back you up. They did have experienced midfield players that probably couldn't get about the pitch, and then they had defenders that were, the fullbacks were asking to be pushed on, and then you're looking at a lack of pace with the likes of Busquets and Piqué. Now, all of a sudden, they've got the players up front that are willing to close down. The midfielders, and including Gavi in this, because sometimes he's in a four, De Jong, Gavi, Pedri, and Busquets, isn't as isolated because all around him are players that can get about the pitch and close down, which then means the defence can step up and play higher, and the defence are far quicker than they were. So they're all the elements of why Barcelona have found it easier to defend this year. So what surprised me and what I've seen from the game is how chaotic it was. It almost appears as if they lost sense of what's making them good this season, because it's still a relatively new group of players with a relatively inexperienced manager. And it looks like they get carried away in European football. And it goes back to the old style where everyone's charging around and chasing about and not showing the discipline and the teamwork and the framework that they've had for the rest of the season. And then suddenly you see in an open game, which suits, you know, it suits us because you get an open, expensive, attractive game of football. But it's not sufficient, I don't think, at the moment for them to be successful in Europe. But of course, despite having no Pedri and Gavi, they still have the talent to get the right result at Old Trafford. Manchester United clearly are favourites now. But I certainly wouldn't rule Barcelona out in this competition. And as you say, it's tough luck on them to have the group they had in the Champions League, which came early in the team's development. And then now to be playing up against Manchester United in the Europa League playoffs is tough going. But it's still all to play for, I think.
Yeah, I mean, there's an element of luck about winning cup competitions, isn't there? Unless you are... You know, it's rare that there is a team in European football that is so much better than every other team and sort of ploughs its way through and wins. It happens sometimes, but generally you need a bit of luck, isn't it? The leagues are more even than that narrative gives credit to. Even in, I looked up the number of away, I heard that guy on the radio say, he said, oh, the away wins. I was like, what is that? What? I looked it up. And what's the only thing? The number of away wins is remarkably even in all leagues, which, you know, there we are. There's not, it's not a thing. It's like the whole League of Late Goals thing, the high profile commentator dreamt up on the spur of the moment. Because again, it's just not, doesn't happen. It's not a thing. You know, just, and it doesn't take long to find out. You can just have a look and find out and then decide. Anyway, back to last night's game. Sergi Roberto, new contract. Sergi Roberto. I haven't looked up as to what it is, whatever it is, too much. But he did score a goal. And after some absolutely dazzling wing play from Ferran Torres.
You're talking turning into false goals, John. Regarding Sergi. No, I'm a slightly different camp. As long as his money is reasonable. No, it hasn't been in the past. I think there have been various changes to his contract to keep him at the club, for him to be one of those players that has, because he should do. I mean, he's a fortunate player to be spending his time, his whole career at Barcelona. But what I would say is I think he's giving them good service as long as it's value for money. Perhaps it hasn't been at times. Perhaps he's been paid a lot more than he should have done because he's been at the club since he was young. He's always been around the first team. But I think he's actually a decent footballer, and he suffered at right back. He did as good as he could, and he wasn't useless at right back. The first time I saw him play right back, I thought, why are they playing Sergio Roberto right back? But he did okay. Played in big games and big competitions, and he was far from useless. And we forget he's a very good midfield player. Not first choice, first team standard at Barcelona if they want to win La Liga and Champions League and stuff like that. But he is their version of Nacho and Lucas Vasquez. And you do need those players. So when he comes in, he doesn't let anybody down. As long as, as I say, the finances are reasonable, which they haven't always been with Sergio Roberto. But if he wants to finish his career at Real Madrid, which is clearly at Barcelona, which is clearly what this is intended for, then as long as it's the right type of money, I have sort of no opposition to him staying at the club.
No, I agree with that. It's just down to the numbers, and I am sceptical that he will have taken a big enough pay cut. I think that's, and I don't mean just him. I think that is a thing of all old players. I think there's a kind of status, I think, that comes with having been around a long time. Sort of is fair enough, but in the harsh world of Barcelona's finances, I don't think there can be much room for sentiment and saying, oh, well, we can't pay him less than we pay Kessié or someone like that. But basically, you can and you should.
Definitely.
Capology have got him down as €96,000 a week. Now that's the expiring contract. So his new one, see, it'd have to be a lot less than that for me. But I take your point. He's at the club. He's versatile. He's obviously a decent fellow and all of those things. But you've just got to be harsh, haven't you?
I would be looking at someone at half that. That salary. Then it may be worth keeping someone like Sergio Roberto. I think his performance last night was okay. He's not going to be a first choice, but he probably might play against Manchester United after scoring and doing, and he'll do a solid job. He's not really Pedri. He's not going to be Gavi.
Yeah.
But is it's hard work for Barcelona.
Is he better than Izzy Palathon?
No.
No. But he's paid 30 times as much, if we believe what we read, you know. So,
and a slightly different position. You wouldn't play Sergio Roberto in a sort of in a 4-2-3-1 out wide, looking to take defenders on, and he is a midfield player. You can clearly make that argument. But it was a hard watch, Barcelona, and I don't think we can take too much out of it. The game against Cadiz, there were players left out, players rotated, players rested because of caution in terms of injuries and stuff like that. They obviously want them all to be fit, or ones that are available. Obviously, you know, Pedri isn't going to be fit, then Belly isn't going to be fit, Busquets back on the bench, Gavi's suspended. So it was a case of, and Lewandowski came off relatively early as well. So it was a case of getting that fixture fulfilled, get the win fulfilled to make sure that they stay ahead of Real Madrid. And as I say, it was a hard watch. Ferran Torres, you mentioned, you highlighted. Clearly, his best game for Barcelona by a mile. Mm-hmm. It was almost like he threw the shackles off and thought, well, I'm not getting a game trying to play conservative. I'm going to show the Valencia, Ferran Torres. And he was, every time he got the ball, he made something happen. His dribbling was excellent, and he played really well. And we know there's a player in there that should be playing for someone on a regular basis, because he is a very good player, but he found it hard to get in at that Barcelona because of Rafinha and Dembele and that Gavi on the other side. And Ansu Fati plays in a similar position. So it was almost last night as if he thought, well, I've tried to be conservative. I've tried to do the right thing tonight. I'm just going to go out and attack people, and the crowd got off their feet. And it was a really good performance by him. But it was a hard watch. But they got the win. They got the 3 points. Somehow kept a clean sheet. I have no idea how. You know, a couple of goals disallowed. Roger Marti's spectacular effort that was disallowed for the foul. I can't remember who it was by on to Stegen. I think it was Fally. There was an offside disallowed. It was stay at the post twice. To Stegen made numerous saves, and Cadiz missed chances they should have done better with. So how that was a clean sheet for Barcelona, no idea how they got away with that one last night. But it'll go down as another game where they haven't conceded a goal. When we look at the bigger narrative, is how well they're defending. In reality, there's been games this season where I can remember Celta Vigo. I can't believe Celta Vigo didn't score at least two or three against them. So it was just a game ticked off. In this schedule, there's going to be games like that where you think it's a banker. They're going to win them, Real Madrid, whoever. But when they make changes and there's a big game around the corner, the motivation might not be as high as it should be when you compare it to Real Madrid's motivation against Osasuna, because they know that's a really difficult fixture, so their motivation was high. Barcelona at home on a Sunday evening against Cadiz with Manchester United around the corner, their main thing was just to get the 3 points, and that was wrapped up by half-time, just before half-time.
Yeah. Let's talk about Real Madrid, shall we? Because they've got a massive European game coming up as well. Off the back of some decent form. I mean, 2-0 away to Osasuna is a good result for anyone anywhere, isn't it? And a win against Elche as well. So the stumble, is that over or is that too much to say?
Yeah, no, I think it is too much to say. And I think they're going to stumble. I think Barcelona will stumble.
Just
depends on Barcelona if they go through. If they go out of Europe, then it makes tidier work of the rest of the season in La Liga.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365 because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply.
In the two Clasicos in the Copa del Rey that Barcelona will want to go through against United. So that it's, but if Real Madrid, with their schedule, there will be stumbles because the league is competitive. We're looking at Barcelona against Cadiz, it's an absolute banker for everybody, but they made hard work of it. Cadiz were decent. So, yeah, you can't afford, we've seen the points that Real Madrid have dropped. If you're complacent, you're not at it, the right players are not playing, then you might stumble. So, in this game, I thought it was close. I thought it was really close until Osasuna. I clearly tired and were a little bit negative, I thought. They were clearly tired towards the end of the game and then started making some silly mistakes. You know, Garcia in particular suddenly started making mistakes. Abde was the mistake for the first goal, a heavy touch, and then he was too shattered to run back and challenge, and it led to a breakaway from Real Madrid. They were clearly the better team, the more assertive team, and they looked the team that wanted to actually win the game as opposed to Osasuna, who it was a sort of half-hearted approach to getting people in the box. And Brasenet, who was a midfielder, was almost playing as a... His position was as a striker, but then play a striker. And I thought Brasenet played really well, but you could have played him in midfield and you could have played another striker. So it was a kind of half-hearted approach to, we're going to take them on, but I'm going to play a midfielder as a attacker and as a second striker, and it didn't really work. So Real Madrid were able to defend quite comfortably against Osasuna. Vinicius, it was a weird game in Osasuna, but everything down there, left Abde, Ezelzouli, everything down the left for Osasuna, so it was on the opposite flanks and persistent attacking down those flanks to the extent you're thinking, if you switch this, you might score a goal on the other side. Yeah. There's literally nobody there. Everyone's on the two left side of attack. So it was it's an outstanding win for Real Madrid. It really is. When you look at the players that were missing, no Benzema, of course. They did suffer with no obvious out-and-out striker playing, particularly in the first half. But in the second half, when when Osasuna tired, it didn't matter if there wasn't a obvious centre forward. Players were getting forward, get the ball to Vinicius, and not play on the break. But when you win possession back and you attack on as much pace and skill as Real Madrid have, then you're going to be in trouble. And Osasuna paid for it. So that was a really good performance. It was an error-free performance from Real Madrid. Interesting, Ancelotti after the game saying we defended really solid. That was the difference in this game. Osasuna didn't. They made mistakes and paid for it, which you will do against Real Madrid, whereas Real Madrid didn't make. There was no mistakes. I mean, Courtois was back in goal. He was forced into very few saves. The defence defended really well. And, you know, it was an impressive result and impressive performance from Real Madrid. No room for error for Real Madrid in La Liga. So to go from that game, the next game is Liverpool. Then we've got the Madrid derby next week. Then we've got some Clasicos, another leg against Liverpool. So I assume at some stage it's going to take its toll. But it's this weird season that we're in because of the World Cup. We've almost kind of forgotten about it. Is we're going to see very few teams that are able to play their strongest 11 in any league on a regular basis. So there's always going to be players missing. For instance, Benzema in this game. He's going to be fit for Liverpool, and it was a case of, well, he played against Elche, he can't play on Sunday because there is a likelihood that he'll be sore, stiff, fatigued for the Liverpool match. I don't quite get why they didn't rest him against Elche. and play him against Osasuna.
So are they saying you can only play once a week?
At this moment, I think. And what we've seen from Benzema this season is he has every now and then, every 3 or 4 weeks, he does miss a game and miss another game. So they're having to be cautious, which is understandable. He's so important. But I would have rested him against Elche, played against Osasuna, but then there might be the issue of he can't play Sunday and Tuesday. Yeah, so it's best to play Thursday and Tuesday and miss the Osasuna game. So they got through it.
Yeah.
He's a miss when he's not playing. Toni Kroos is a miss when he's not playing. But they've got a fantastic squad. Tchouaméni was in the squad, but was ill, so he couldn't be involved. And you look at their midfield, it's still
super talented. I mean,
loads of bodies in midfield.
You can't do anything about it right now, but should they break the bank for the best centre forward you can think of? Given that they had money to sign Mbappe, I don't know, Victor Osimhen from Napoli or something like that. Would you pay, I don't know, whatever?
Yeah. I think that is the position, isn't it?
Yeah.
And clearly it's going to happen. It's inevitable one day, and not too far away, that Benzema isn't going to play till he's 40. That's the position, but Bellingham seems to be the one that they're mostly interested in. But they're well stocked in midfield, although Modric and Toni Kroos are pushing on. I looked at the stats of the weekend. Modric has equaled his personal best since leaving Croatia in terms of goals scored this season. And surprisingly, it's low. 4 in the league, 6 in all competitions. He's only done it once. Never did it at Spurs. And at Real Madrid, he did it in season 2021. So he's on the verge at the age of 37 of breaking his record since all those years ago leaving Croatia. But at the age of 37, to keep going to the well every 3 or 4 days and play at the level he does, it's going to take some doing. But they have Camavinga, they have Ceballos, who's becoming an important player.
Yeah.
Tchouaméni is young. Valverde is young. So it's they've well stocked in midfield, no doubt. And maybe one or two younger players that Arribas has come into the team recently and done well. So your point is, do they need Bellingham? Probably not. Do they need a centre-forward to one day replace Benzema? Definitely. But does that centre-forward want to hang around at Real Madrid and be like Luka Jovic and Mariano Diaz and be on the bench for the next couple of years?
Do you now go for a guy? The advantage of Mbappe... Well, Mbappe, the problem with signing Mbappe would have been Vinicius, wouldn't it? Because he plays from that left side. So Mbappe is the kind of player who could play as a centre-forward or could play wide. So you can facilitate Mbappe without having to get rid of Benzema. If they do sign... I mean, I've literally made up Victor Osimhen because I just think he's the best centre-forward that I can think of. If you do sign a proper centre-forward... We're at a stage now with Benzema, I think, where he's got to be the number one, isn't it? I still think Benzema's brilliant, but if they happen to patch him up to get him to play big games, it's a problem. And you can't just have Mariano Diaz and Jovic and these sort of sticking plaster solutions who the previous coaches obviously don't believe in.
And the other sticking plaster is Rodrigo.
Who doesn't fit the profile, he's not a centre forward.
He's an outstanding footballer.
Yeah.
Can drop deep, get on the ball, but he's not. He doesn't really. Which happened at the weekend.
Yeah.
He didn't put himself up against the centre backs.
He didn't play as a centre forward. No, I had a look, and you're absolutely right. Everyone, the heat map is like going to set fire down the left side because they all play there.
So it is an issue. Look, as you said, the choices are few and far between, aren't they? And it's. Where there aren't that many centre forwards around, you can compare to anything like Benzema in terms of quality. So it's going to be a different type of centre forward, and one that is going to cost a fortune. And we want to play not every game, but every big game Real Madrid have. He'll expect to start, and that probably won't be the case for another, I think, a couple of years more with Benzema. I don't see him bailing out at the end of this season or next season. I think there's another couple of years of Benzema still performing at a top level, maybe not 60 games a year, no international football. So that might be the big issue with finding a cover centre-forward that's willing to sit around and not play in the big games because Benzema's still so good.
Or, as I say, capable of playing a different role if you want them both in the team at the same time, which is a possibility, isn't it? But I don't, it's a slight issue, isn't it, at the moment? Like I say, they need Benzema fit, in my view, to play against Liverpool.
And the Vinicius issue is heading, building ahead of steam, isn't it? Where teams clearly know they can rattle him, they can wind him up, they get stuck in and provoke him in the hope that he'll get himself booked and sent off. And Osasuna did it again. Mallorca did it recently. It's been happening since football began. And star players that you think you can stop by foul means, by, you know, being aggressive. No, I have no issues with that, as long as the referee applies the rules properly. But then they know there's going to be a reaction from Vinicius, and pretty much in every game they play, particularly away from home, even the supporters are aware of it. And somehow he's got to overcome this as part of his development, where, you know, it happened to Messi, but the people stopped doing it. It happened to Ronaldo, but people stopped doing it. Benzema, all these fantastic players, they all go through this. And if they don't react, then people stop doing it, basically. But I think everyone's aware now that if you do play a certain way against Vinicius, he does react. Ancelotti's reacting as well. I don't think there was anything untoward in the Osasuna game, but Vinicius allows himself to get wrapped up in it, and he's just got to concentrate on what he does best, and that's play brilliant football. You know, if someone gets close and the referee doesn't give a foul, he's just going to have to suffer it, and I hope the referee does apply the rules properly if it is a foul. I think there are times where he initiates, it looks more serious than it is. He's looking for and hoping for contact. He's playing his part in trying to get the opposing players booked. The bench get involved, and I just hope that somewhere along the line, in the second half, actually, because I thought him and Moy Gomez were going at it. Moy Gomez isn't a dirty player, but he's experienced enough to know if he gets close and he gets aggressive, and he went down, threw himself down as if Vinicius had fouled him, and Vinicius hadn't. Vinicius had just got to walk away from that. But he went back, and they had a head-to-head, and they both got booked. Vinicius didn't deserve to get booked because he was part of a confrontation, he got booked. So that rolled up him. But in the second half, he kept out of it.
Yeah.
And he plays better. So that's part of his learning process. But it's been happening since football began. Star players do get singled out by away supporters, by the opposing players. And if they think there's a chink in your armour, then they will go for it. So he's got to overcome that, concentrate on his football. And he's a brilliant player. I mean, one touch he did in the first half when the ball was over the top, and Moncayola couldn't have marked him any better. They were touch tight. The ball was coming over their shoulders, and he brings it down with the outside of his foot. It was a sensational piece of skill. So just, you know, I hope he just concentrates on that. And sooner or later, the hatchet men, Moy Gomez, who's not, will give up and trying to, you know, wind him up and get him booked and sent off and put him off his game at the very least. So, but he was really good in the second half in particular.
Villarreal, Terry, I want your view on what's wrong with Quique Setién. Now, obviously, in this game, he is let down, isn't he? Trigueros gets sent off very early in the game. I thought Reina was poor. But they get well beaten by Mallorca, and it's not an isolated incident. It's four in a row. So, you know, there's the mitigation over.
I looked at the four in a row. It was 1999, and I only recognised Andres Palop. So this and they got relegated. This was before Villarreal became the club that we've all grown accustomed to. So it's a bad sequence of results. In this one, I mean, the first goal was terrible, wasn't it? The Pepe Reina, I had no idea what he's thinking. I talk about players making sloppy mistakes. He tried the little dink out. It's gone nowhere. It's gone straight to a Mallorca player, and Cadawere gets the first goal. And then a minute later, Trigueros throws a punch. It was the only blot on the copybook of Danny Rodriguez's night. He scored two goals, headers, and then we found out he's got a glass jaw. So
he's not got a career as a boxer coming. Yeah.
I mean, there was contact. It wasn't that bad. He's gone down. It's I think the referee would have actually sent Trigueros off without Danny Gonzalez taking hitting the deck and getting up after a count of eight. But it was so that doesn't help Quique Setién. But the four straight defeats and the we're talking about the importance of Benzema to Real Madrid. Gerard Moreno doesn't play for Villarreal. They lose games of football. It's really ridiculous how that's working out. They have got other injury problems as well. But it's, and Mallorca is a tough place to go and play. It's their fifth straight home win. They've won the others by 1-0, and then they enjoyed. I mean, they look really good, Mallorca at home. I wouldn't say they're a disaster away from home. They've got more points than some teams in the division. But Aguirre has certainly got them fired up. So he'll be irritated they conceded two goals, but he'd be delighted that with the quality of the finishing. I liked the performance of Tino Cadewere as well. I think what I've seen so far, I've been thinking, why doesn't he start?
Yeah.
So this was his first start, and he was dynamic, he was skillful, he was really good. So he gave a new element to Mallorca in terms of that, and Danny Rodriguez went into a more midfield role. So the introduction of Cadewere to the starting 11 made them look a more attractive team, and it was the right thing to do.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365, because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply.
To take advantage of Villarreal, we're out of form, no confidence, missing Gerard Moreno, and the approach of Cadewere playing, it worked, along with Kangin Lee and Marici, and they looked really good. You know they are a good team.
Do you know how much they paid for Cadewere? I don't know the answer.
It
seems a good signing for a club that not a lot of money, when we're talking in terms of La Liga clubs, restricted budgets and all of that. Seems a decent signing, doesn't it? You know, player with a good goal scoring record.
Very much so. They did well in the last winter window when they bought Marici. He transformed their season. Yeah. Cadewere is coming this time, and thankfully he's got his opportunity from the start and showed that he's going to be sticking around, I think. First player from Zimbabwe to score in La Liga, I understand. So
I couldn't name many others. Oh, Peter Unlove, of course.
Many
years ago, but good. The march of Zimbabwe, good to see. I don't think anyone listens to us from Zimbabwe, but you're welcome if you do. Right, Real Sociedad dropped points again. It's two home games in a row that they've left points behind. A little bit frustrating for them, wouldn't it? Especially as they ended up this game against 10 men and conceding in the 93rd minute.
And Celta should have won this by 2 or 3 goals.
Right.
This was a really good... I was actually quite pleased Celta got something from the game because the week before they should have beat Atletico Madrid and Oblak single-handedly kept them out. Then they concede to Memphis Depay in the last minute of the game. You think, oh, that must be painful. You're thinking that you're at home against Atletico. You've had shot after shot after shot. And you're thinking Atletico go down to 10. And Oblak still pulling off miracle saves, and you're thinking that this is going to be a real blow if we don't win this game, and then you lose it. And this was the same. They were by far the better team. That Real Sociedad recently they've been playing the same players. They are missing injured players. They're having to dig deep into their squad. They work really hard, but they in this particular game they scored after 5 minutes, and it looked like it was going to be one of those games. The approach looked similar to where last season we joked about. That's like 12 1-0 wins. And it kind of looked like this. Oyarzabal gets the early goal. Things look bright. And then it tailed off and Celta had more possession. And then Celta just were, I thought, the more dominant team throughout the rest of the match. It took a last-minute own goal. And ironically, this week, it was Celta that were down to 10 men and came back and got the equaliser. So Lenormand with the own goal is the least they deserve. And I think Celta were really good. And it's a problem when you're Celta and you keep playing well and not getting anything, then it becomes a real drain on your belief and confidence. So I thought it was the least they deserve. But for Real Sociedad, when you saw the Norman score the own goal, he looked out on his feet at the end of it. You know, he conceded the 93rd minute and he was his hands were on his knees. And they're working really hard, Real Sociedad, but they do need some of the injured players back. And they do need to rotate the squad a little bit. European games coming up. They're the a significant gap over them and Betis before the weekend's action, and Atletico Madrid. I think it was 8 points over Betis. It was the first time I noticed before the game. I saw it and I thought, that's a significant gap. You know, if they're 8 points ahead of fifth place Betis, they're in a smashing position. That's clipped down to sixth. They're only a couple of points now, I think, above Atletico Madrid. So it's, as you said, the last home game, they lost at home to Valladolid. Now they've drawn at home to Celta. So a little bit of a turning point for La Real at this stage of the season. As I said, the players look tired and they could do with one or two to recover from off the treatment table and freshen things up again. Marino, David Silva, players like that. They're important players.
Atleti beat Atletico Madrid against Athletic of Bilbao by a goal to nil. I was confused. I missed the start of this game and I was thinking, hang on, who's at home? Who's wearing what kit? They basically swapped kits, didn't they? That happens in kids' football sometimes when someone turns up without theirs. You borrow our spare one. It was because...
nice reason, actually. Nice gesture, wasn't it?
Yeah, so... Atletico is basically an offshoot of Athletic. So it's Athletic's 125th anniversary, and Atleti made the gesture as an acknowledgement of that to just remind everybody that they started as an offshoot of Athletic. So there we are. That was the reason for it. It confused me, but that's probably easy. Antoine Griezmann, Terry, is playing some lovely football at the moment. The 22nd time I heard last night, he scored the only goal of a 1-0 win, which is record equaling, apparently. So congratulations to him. Important result. Is he tinkering less, Simeone?
No, he is. There's not the constant changing. There is a personnel from one game to the other. You're still not sure which is what the personnel is going to be, particularly up front. This time it was Correa up front leading the line, and Griezmann this time was playing as a second striker and giving that license to Rome, whereas in the game the week before, he was asked to play wide on the left. So it was the same system, but players in different positions. And I think Griezmann clearly is the most influential player at Atletico Madrid. He does everything at a very, very good level. Every single aspect of football, he does at a very good level. He's unselfish, works hard defensively, covers so much ground. His link-up play is fantastic. His finishing can be fantastic. So he does everything to a really good level. But you need him to... That type of player needs to be an influence. And out wide, you rely on people giving you the ball. Whereas Griezmann can go searching for it, playing in that role. Still don't think that maybe Correa was the right option, but Morata was brought on and Memphis Depay was brought on at some stage during the game. So I think he's trying to find that centre-forward. I think it's Morata. I think if you're going to play Griezmann, I think Morata will be the one should be, or Memphis. I think he needs a proper centre-forward. I don't think Correa fits that profile of, you know, he's dynamic, he's diminutive, he moves about the pitch well. He kind of could be similar to Griezmann, or Correa could play in a wider position, but I don't see him as the answer as the centre forward. Good player, but not centre forward. So I think that's all it. And we're not seeing the constant changes during the game of different systems. So I think it is. And they've won defeat in the last eight, and that was Barcelona at home. Quietly, they've crept back into contention, whereas I would say at the moment, they will finish third. I think they've closed the gap to Real Sociedad. They're dropping points. And Atletico are in a good, consistent piece of form.
No Europe.
No Europe. Confidence is improving. The belief is getting stronger. So I expect that the top three, the usual top three, to finish in the top three positions.
Yeah. So Betis got a decent win against Valladolid. Carl Larin scored again. Goal machine. It's a brilliant start to his career in Spain, isn't it? But important win for Betis.
Yeah, and I couldn't believe it that Carl Larin didn't start last week.
Yeah.
But clearly this week he had to play. And he's one of those strikers that's going to keep getting chances. There are strikers, and you know, I've played with them and coached them. There's some strikers that are really good at finishing and got really good aspects of the game. And sometimes you finish a match and you go, didn't have any chances, didn't have any shots. What happened? Where did we go wrong? And then there are some who just keep having shot after shot and chance after chance. It's down to positional play and instinct and stuff like that. And that's what Carl Larin has got. I think he's going to miss as many as he scores, which was the case in this game. He took his goal really well. this was a scrambled win for Betis. So we're really impressive in the first half. Canales in particular. You're talking about Griezmann's performance. Canales had a similar performance for Betis. And he got injured at half, went off at half time. And there was an apprehension and anxiety about the whole stadium. I didn't realise they'd gone five without a win at home. And that's sort of that we were talking, you know, 6 weeks ago about them possibly top four. Now that looks a bit beyond them. Not impossible, of course. But it was down to this poor record at home in recent weeks, which kind of crept up unnoticed. To the extent you saw Pellegrini saying, we need a good performance at home constantly before the game in the pre-match interviews. What he meant was we need a win, not a performance. They needed a win. And that was very much the case in this game. They were hanging on. They were below par. Vida, I think, deserved a share of the spoils in this game. But somehow Betis got across the line. Lovely pass for Canales for the first goal for Wembley. Canales with the penalty, as you say, Cole, I remember the goal. And Betis were hanging on for dear life at the end. And you saw the relief in the stadium, the relief from Pellegrini, the relief from the players. Betis, yeah, were fortunate. But that's what you have to do, learn how to win. They've done that, and I expect better from them now. A great initiative taken. They had 1,700 people at the game with disabilities. The numbers in the kits before the game were in Braille. It was the most inclusive football match. And Betis, as a club, are doing some really good stuff. They have that Christmas, the soft toy project at Christmas, don't they? And it's a good watch on television, Betis, in their own stadium.
Yeah.
Full house, plenty of passion, some good footballers. They just needed a win at home to get their season back on track. And they, but their perspective, that they just managed to hang on in the end.
Let's stay in the city of Seville. So Sevilla drew 1-1 away to Rayo Vallecano, Suso, and then Lejeune with a header from a corner, if I remember rightly. Yeah. Set piece anyway. Again, I was telling people that Sevilla aren't the threat that they would be in the Europa League that they have been, but then they absolutely thrashed PSV.
Oh, they were fantastic.
And played really well, didn't they?
Yeah, it was. I think it was great to see. I mean, it was the full house, European football, and Sevilla were really good against a decent PSV. Ocampos is having a massive influence since he's been back at the club.
Yeah,
I mean, I find it astonishing that they let him leave on that silly deal. Thankfully, they've been able to get him back where he never played at Ajax. I can't believe he never played at Ajax. I can't believe Ajax didn't make the most of him, and Ajax have been poor this season. And he's come back to Sevilla and just lit the place up. And Nesri is back on form. His confidence. He's had one of those little spurts where he goes on a run of scoring goals. So in that game, they were brilliant against PSV. The 3-0 didn't flatter them. It looked like a good old version of Sevilla. In this game, though, they were problems. They were against a really good team in Rayo, away from home, and loads of players missing again through injury. And Sampaoli stuck up in the...
In prison.
I mean, it wasn't a corporate box, was it? I don't think that exists at Rayo. And he was still wrapped up with a ski jacket and the hat on. And let me tell you, I've just returned from Spain, and most of Spain this week has been warm, really hot. So I've no idea what's going on underneath that jacket and the bubble hat indoors in a corporate in a box.
You wouldn't let him loose in a room with lots of posh stuff around the place, would you?
No, that's a tough fixture for them. And they'll be disappointed they didn't take the 3 points because they were ahead. But when you look at the players that were missing, they barely had a centre-half in the squad. And it was a good attitude. So Sevilla are going to be fine. And they'll be in a position, they'll go through this stage of the Europa League, and they'll be in a position of mid-table mediocrity soon, where their focus will be on Europe. When you saw the atmosphere in the stadium at the Sanchez Pizjuan for the PSV game, with the season that they're having, they're up for it. And the players were up for it. The supporters were up for it. They're going to be a tough opponent in that competition. And being in the position they will be in La Liga will help them, you know, to maybe focus on that competition. So that's my prediction, Sevilla to win the Europa League.
Oh, boom, in there. Right. I've spent many weeks moaning about a lack of goals in La Liga, Terry. We have 27 in the 9 games that we've played so far, but one in particular, I suppose we should have talked about this earlier, Girona 6, Almeria 2, out there. I mean, it wasn't exactly a thriller, was it? Because it was 4-0 by half-time. Goals 2 and 3 were, I think I made it 13 seconds apart.
Yes.
And then Almeria got a couple in the second half, but it was they were blown away.
Oh, they were brilliant, Jerome. I mean, one team were brilliant and the other team were absolutely diabolical. Mm. Four substitutions were being made at half-time.
Yeah.
So that
yeah.
tells you, and surprisingly, the lack of them were defenders. Yeah, when I'm looking at the first half and the goals conceded, you think, well, no one's running back there. No one's marking that player. It's a narrow back four. They're allowing the ball to go wide. They're allowing you to cross it. And then, surprisingly enough, the four narrow defenders are not marking anyone in the box. There's a recipe for disaster. And that's exactly as it was. It was diabolical defending from Almeria, but the attacking play from Girona was scintillating. It was really good. I mean, I think it was Javier Hernandez for the fourth goal. There was back heels involved and flicks, and there was loads of 1-2s and loads of players getting forward. Good deliveries into the box. The right back, Arnel Martinez, was fantastic. There's Sienkov, who's the new player from Ukraine. He was the one involved with back heels and stuff. They were brilliant. They were great to watch. It was a surprise. I mean, Friday night, Girona Almeria, two teams, similar positions in the league. The aspirations are to stay in the division. One's got a good home record, one's got a bad away record. So Girona, you make slight favourites, but it's one of those games where you think, Almeria got some decent players, this could be tight. And they were blown away in that first half. Worrying for Ruby, I would imagine, that in the fact that they were so bad, particularly in that first half. He made changes at half-time. Two of the subs came on and scored. And you look at them and think, Ramazani and El Bilal, El Bilal maybe should be playing anyway. So it was brilliant from Girona, catastrophic from Almeria. I wonder how much this will have an impact on the next few weeks for Almeria defensively. It puts the pressure on teams below them of picking up points. So that was a real problematic night for Ruby. But for Michel and Girona, they were brilliant. They were awesome.
Really important result for Espanyol. Brilliant strike by Sergi Darda. 92nd minute at Elche when they'd almost dropped points against 10 men. And they got the win. Elche, we celebrated the victory a couple of weeks ago, but they are now 13 points adrift.
No so chance for Elche.
Yeah.
No, literally no chance. They've got to avoid all the unwanted records. That's their main thing now. Mm-hmm. They've got no chance of staying up. Games like this, they have to win. It was kind of a shame for them. They win a game, then the next game is Real Madrid away. But then you're playing Espanyol at home. I can't believe this 0-0 until the 92nd minute. There was 31 shots combined from the two teams. Defending was awful. Attacking was awful. And I can't believe that Espanyol didn't wrap it up a lot earlier, to be honest. They had the better chances. So it was a crushing blow for Elche, but a massive relief for Espanyol. And Denis Suarez looked bright and lively and playing for Espanyol. They've done some work in the transfer window, but morale was rock bottom, confidence was rock bottom, and now they've got this win that might help them in their pursuit to try and stay in the division. Half the division are involved in the relegation battle, but one or two teams are getting closer now to, I think Mallorca might get dragged into it still. But with the win against Villarreal, they're now above Villarreal in the league. So we can't say that they're above Osasuna.
So
we can't include them in it. 31 points, you with a home form in particular, two or three wins is they'll do that. So Mallorca. So I think in the next few weeks we're going to start ticking things off that.
Yeah.
Oh, they're not involved in it. Sevilla will be soon. I think they'll be. Oh, they're not involved in it. They're not involved in it. And then when you look down the list, it's these games between these teams are going to be crucial. So Elche, Espanyol have to beat Elche, even though it's away from home. And they left it late. But as I say, 31 shots, some good goalkeeping, some poor finishing. It looked like the finishing of two teams that have, particularly with Hossolu not playing, it looked like two teams that are struggling to score goals, no confidence. But Sergi Darda with a fine strike to win it.
So a huge game, therefore, Monday night, that we haven't seen yet. You might have seen it by the time you listen to this, in which case you can turn off, and we'll see you next week. So Getafe against Valencia. Ruben Baraja is in at Valencia. Right, terrific player, part of the Rafa Benitez era. Yeah, midfielder. A good old-fashioned midfielder, and he was a bit of an all-round midfielder.
Yeah, box-to-box. I was asked to explain what he was like as a player to viewers, and Fede Valverde. Yeah, he could finish from distance. He was up and down the pitch. He was the obvious one off the top of my head I could think of, that type of dynamic player that was good at everything. Mm. So it's a wise choice to bring him in, apart from the fact he's... attributes to not particularly don't appear to be particularly good as a manager, other than the fact he's a brilliant player.
His record's indifferent, isn't it?
Elche, Rayo, Sporting, Tenerife, Zaragoza, and now Valencia, all second division clubs, and he didn't last them at most of those jobs. So it's a big call to give a manager who probably hasn't shown with his CV that he should be manager of Valencia, other than the fact he's a legend. Mm. So is that going to be enough to galvanise, hopefully, with the amount of jobs that he's had in second divisions, first time he's managed in the top flight? He's learned things along the way. He's going to be popular with the fans. So at least someone behind the scenes is going to be popular with the fans initially, and you know, as long as they start picking up points and winning games. So Getafe, that's going to be a battle. It has to be a battle. Valencia have to battle. It's not their preferred style. The Getafe will battle. So the fact that Getafe will battle and they'll be, you know, they'll do everything to try and win a game on the Monday night at home to be leagued Valencia with a new manager hoping to get a bounce from the new manager appearing. Getafe can be really aggressive. So it's going to be interesting to see if Valencia can cope with that.
And it's a strange rivalry, this fixture as well, isn't it?
I know the reason, and it's obvious, but the bloke who started it isn't there. It's gone. he's Jose Bordalás
managed Valencia more recently.
And then managed Valencia, and Getafe didn't like him. Getafe Valencia when Bordalás was manager was the classic. They're not going to enjoy playing against us. Mm-hmm. We're going to get stuck in. We're going to be direct. We're going to wind them up. I'm going to be like I am on the bench. And then, of course, when he managed Valencia, Getafe got the ump because he left Getafe to go to Valencia and stuff like that. But he's not there anymore. But somehow, I'm not so sure the rivalry still exists. Mm-hmm. We'll see on Monday night. We'll see. I think the Bordalás effect has gone now. And this is just two teams who are going to fight for their lives to stay in the division.
We need some points because they're both in the bottom three.
I'm looking forward to this game, actually. I don't expect it to be technically the best game of the weekend. Mm. But in terms of, you know, drama, I think that the stakes are so high.
Yeah.
Both are in the bottom three. So it's going to be interesting.
Yes. Right. Well, enjoy it, everybody. Enjoy it, Terry. And enjoy your European football this week as well. Slightly slim down these days for La Liga, isn't it? Or this season. So we're back. We'll be back chatting with the Patreons later. If you want to join us, it's patreon.com/LTEL, and it's relatively cheap, I think, anyway, in my opinion. So thank you for your support, everybody. Thank you to the Patreons, and we'll see you all for a podcast next week. Bye-bye.